if you're a strong advocate of states' rights, or you not really believe that the state government would make anything
out of
it?
I don't know a lot about him other than what they've had on television. He was in the military and became disenchanted with the first war over there in Iraq, and then when they burnt those people alive in Texas, that infuriated him. And then with Randy, what's his name up there in Idaho, Randy Weaver and his family, I knew exactly why he was thinking what he was thinking, because I was just as pissed off, but I didn't go out and start shooting. I did send some men up to Ruby Ridge. They got stopped and disarmed before they could get there. Because I have no use for these federal people. I see them as just like an occupier. And they have no use for me either.
But so you don't believe what he did was wrong.
Wrong or right is subjective, and.
Well, I'm talking about this, but from your perspective, your subjective.
From my perspective, he was a soldier, and he declared war on the government, and he did what a soldier does when they declared a war on a government or anybody else. He acted upon it, and he built his bomb, and he did it. I don't pass moral judgments on it. Would I do it? I doubt it. I don't think I would.
Would you advocate others?
I advocate racial self-defense or self-defense period against the government. If the government wants to pick on the people and do bad things to the people, then I would expect it's the natural right of the people to strike back violently at the government. And so, I mean, whether I was black or what I was, I believe in that. It's called the right of revolution, and the law books they talk about it quite a bit. You have the right of revolution, but the other side has the right to hang you, too, if you lose. Luckily, Washington and Jefferson and the boys won. I have more respect for individual warfare like that than massive warfare, dropping bombs on everybody and pattern bombing and dropping napalm on people. And governments are the greatest terrorists. McVeigh knocked out one building. Our military go in and knock out thousands of buildings.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Ethiopian trial, Seattle trial.
Sure.
Why did you decide to represent yourself?
Because I didn't have any money.
Well, I mean, there was no one that would take that on?
No.
Couldn't you get a public defender?
$100,000. That's what they wanted. Hmm. They already took my house. I couldn't borrow money on my house.
Yeah, what about the public defender?
Well, this was a civil case. You couldn't really get a public defender.
Yeah.
If it had been criminal, I could have. I could have got a great attorney if it had been a criminal case.
Yeah. I mean, don't you know,
the opposition keeps saying, oh, he did that because he was just grandstanding and showing off. I would have rather eaten glass than take care of my own case. It was horrible. It's no wonder I didn't have a nervous breakdown and ulcers by the time that trial was over. And the most ridiculous thing I read is when D's say, oh, he just did that to show off. Huh. Baloney. It was horrible. Never want to have to go through one of those deals again. No, we had to do what we had to do, and other than a little advice, that's the way we did it. I had lawyers calling me, say, oh, yeah, I'll take the case. I can get you all, blah, blah, blah. Well, how much? Well, it'll be $100,000. I said, well, I'll owe it to you. I'll forget that.
Yeah. No, no.
And the PC, we wrote a letter after the trial to every lawyer in Portland. And just to see what they'd say, we put in a letter, well, we want to thank you for the support of our constitutional rights in the Metzger trial. And we got letters from all of them saying, we wouldn't defend that son of a bitch, he's the last man on earth. There's not one lawyer up there that said, well, I think...
Well, this is PR, you know. Huh? Well, what would everyone else say about them up there if they defended you, you know?
Well, they defend child molesters and rapists and serial killers. I guess we're one step down from a serial killer. I think that a child molester has more rights than I do. That is not speaking very well for the system. Number one, if I wanted to kill a black person, I would undoubtedly do it myself. I would have gone to Portland and found me a black person and killed them. But that's not my style. I had nothing to do with the death of that Syrah kid, and never promoted it, never told the skinheads to do anything like that. I told them to hand out literature of which they were doing, and it was just a street fight. It was bad, and if you'll read...
Hundred Little Hitlers?
Yeah, if you'll read that, it pretty well tells a story.
Yeah, that seems to be her, yeah. Her belief.
And she's happens to be Jewish, and she was extremely fair, and but her book now is selling for about $4 a piece on Amazon, so people want to believe, they want to believe, you know. There's a few honest liberals out there, but very few.
I mean,
but I survived, and my family survived, and I think we came out of it stronger. But we didn't bend our knee, and we didn't cave in. I was offered a deal to keep my house, keep my business, keep it all, if I would quit doing what I do and quit publishing a newspaper and quit going around making speeches and quit being a public racist. If I just went back and did my business and got out of politics, they were prepared to let me keep everything. But that's not the way I operate. I'm the first one that really stood up to Dee, and he has never quite recovered from it either, because he's been attacked by the left wing a lot, and for his handling of the money and everything. I'm giving them a little trouble right now because they have not paid the taxes on a lot of the money they took in.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the kid who supposedly got the money has paid any taxes either. And they have never given me a up-to-date list of all the money that's been collected. So I think that they're operating a little beyond the law right now. But it just irks them that I kept going. I kept publishing the newspaper. I kept doing everything I always did. And they just tried to pretend I wasn't around anymore. I always said about Deez, I said, he should go back and read Uncle Remus and the story of Briar Fox and Tar Baby.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get stuck on somebody and you can't get loose. And I caused him a lot of trouble, Deez.
What do you feel about him? He's still...
Oh, he is typical of a real crook. He pays out hardly any of the money to the victims.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got $150 million stolen away. Even the big outfits that have keep an eye on tax-exempt outfits like that, they said the guy's a crook. He took in $7 million in donations off my trial.
Yeah. Who said he was a crook?
It was on the O'Reilly Factor show that a guy came on that was involved with an organization that keeps an eye on all these tax-exempt groups.
Mm-hmm.
And checks on how much money they're actually spending on what they say they're spending. And they said he's one of the worst. That they got $100-150 million solid away, and he spends just a teeny fraction of that every year.
Yeah.
And they, of course, they always, people assume that he gets all this money for his clients. He doesn't. I mean, he goes after working class people. We've got no money, not enough money to help them out. And
so what do you think he is?
Pardon me?
What does he get?
Well,
donations?
He drives big cars, lives in big houses.
Well, I mean, if they don't collect on these working class people.
They give the victims peanuts, you know. But the black lady down there in he sued the UKA, United Clans of America, and they won the case. But they got this big metal building that the UKA owned, and but they never even got the money out of it until after the woman was dead that brought the suit.
Mm-hmm.
So they get peanuts, because most of the people they sue don't have any money. I mean, I never made more than $25,000 a year, and all the time I was there. He claimed I took in all his money. Why? It's ridiculous. I didn't even run a membership organization, so I didn't even collect dues.
Hey, after this, though, there was some story about how you went on welfare briefly.
I did. I laughed at him. I said, "You want to play guerrilla warfare? I'll go on welfare." And I did, and I'm glad I did, because that helped finance the medicals for all my family and everything, and helped me send my one daughter to the University of Washington. And poverty can be pretty good sometimes. I got probably a $25,000 operation on my eye for nothing.
Did you feel bad at all taking money from the federal government?
No, I'm taking it from the people. The federal government don't have any money. They just rob it and then give some of it back. I wanted to punish the people, because these are the people set on the jury that illegally lynched me and my family. So I said, "You're going to do that? You're going to take care of me? You're going to pay me back?" And I got every dime that I could possibly wring out of the system. And I was thrilled to do it. I was a productive citizen. I ran my business. I paid my taxes most of the time. I owned my home. I was model citizen around the town, everything else, until that happened. So then I said, well, I'll have to play the other way.
So what did you think about the whole trial?
It was a legal lynching, that's all it was. At least one man on the jury did not go along with them, and if I'd had one more, I would have won, but I only had one, and that's... No, I mean, see, there was only one witness that screwed me, and that was David Mazzella. And David Mazzella was a liar, and he was coached and paid every month several hundred dollars for years for his false testimony. He wasn't even where the kid was killed. He wasn't even there. But yet he testified, lied, that I had trained him in Fallbrook.
He said also that there's a funny story about how you were like sort of the best man to his wedding or something like that.
I was, yeah. I officiated at his wedding. In fact, I married the little booger.
you were the priest?
Preacher, yeah. Yeah, we were up here in the mountains in a camp campground. He married this gal. She left him because he was a rat. Anyhow.
The wedding, though.
Huh?
There, something I read said that you showed, like, a white Aryan movie the night before.
Yeah, and then I took my big screen up there, and we showed racial movies all night.
And then during the wedding, there was, was everyone, like, decked out in Nazi garb or something?
Well, it depended. I mean, there were skinheads, there were Nazis, there were Klansmen, all kinds of people there. I mean, in different garb, but most of them just wore regular clothes.
Yeah. Ceremony was a little different.
Yeah, it was a racist ceremony.
Move on to Red Dog Leader.
Hey, Moondog, is this just another John?
Why don't I come up and say hi to you fellas? Yeah. Over.
You sound like a jarhead. Okay, come on up here.
This is old Moondoggy, over.
Yeah, Moondoggy. I almost ran over your ass in Hollywood many years ago, Moondoggy. Jimmy, what was his name?
Yeah, Moondog, over and out.
10-4. So anyhow, this guy, they picked him up, took him down there, wined him and dined him, took him out sport fishing, everything, going to put him in a movie and everything, and he just lied his ass off. I mean, he said, I trained him in my home to go kill black people. And the jury bought that crap. I got one of his payslips that a guy sent me. He found it in a car that Mazzella had used, that Deez was paying him like $500-$700 a month. They got him a job. They got him a new car, and Deez was paying him off all the way up to the Supreme Court. U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear our case. We took it all the way to Supreme Court. I don't even get credit for that. It was fucking press. I mean, that was hell of a struggle. I went through all the appeals process all the way to the Supreme Court, and they wouldn't hear it. Well, after that, I was dead in the water, and so Deez quit paying him off. None of the press went really hard to Mazzella and asked hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
He was recruiting for the Klan while he was testifying against me. They had a teenage nightclub. He was over there, and the security guard caught him recruiting for the Klan. He claimed he's no longer a racist, and he was a good boy.
The ceremony, though, just get back. It was a wedding ceremony. What made it a racist ceremony?
It was a ceremony that had to do with the COTC, the church, and what's his name that had owned that. Anyhow, it was a ceremony designed along racial lines that your genes are going to go on into the future and be a part of thousands of people and all this kind of stuff. I don't have it right in front of me. Ben Klassen's World Church of the Creator, of which that may have been in the White Man's Bible or in the forget the other book. But I was not a Christian anymore, so I wasn't going to use any of this Christian crap.
Do you believe in God at all? No.
I believe in that nature out there. It's a beautiful place. I don't want to go any place. I want to stay here as long as possible. And when I die, just cremate me and throw the remains out. I don't care. But, no, I'm an atheist.
When did you not only revoke
1980, I became crossed the line and dumped all religion. I don't want anything.
So it was one fell swoop. You went right from
I went from Christianity to atheism.
Yeah.
Well, atheists sometimes go to Christianity, same thing, you know.
No, it was also went from Christianity into the Klan and atheist at the same time.
Well, I was a Protestant, and then after I was married, I became a Catholic, and then I became Christian Identity in 70, and then I became atheist in 80. So I had quite a few changes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that hurt me with a lot of the right wing in the country, because they talk about being Christian and racist. Turn Catholic marriage.
Right. And then I left the Catholic religion to be into identity religion. And then I finally said, I'm leaving Christianity altogether. It's not the answer to the problem, it's the cause of a lot of the problem. Most of the problem and the violence in the world is caused by religion, not racism. Racism, very small contributor to violence compared to religion.
Is there anything you regret?
Regret? I only regret failure. I've had setbacks, which I regret, but I haven't failed because I've indoctrinated in one way or another hundreds, thousands of people, kids. So I've got a couple of generations of young people that I have brought on board, and they're bringing more on board. So if I died tomorrow, my job would have been pretty well completed. I knew I wouldn't be the super leader that would lead the race out of the mess, but I knew that I would contribute to it, and down the line the leaders will come forth that will have developed the power to really change things. People are not ready for it yet, but they're getting there.
What do you think will turn?
It's hard for me to put, and every time you put dates on things.
No. When? What do you think will make people turn?
Moon down the red valley, over.
Yeah, okay. It's hard to say what will trigger a massive upheaval. I think it's going to be hooked to economics first. I think that's the upheaval between the haves and the have-nots all over the world and in this country is going to be the factor that begins the violence. But then it'll break down into racial and cultural struggle and religious struggle. So there'll be all kinds of struggles going on inside a larger struggle. You're going to see blacks that are attacking the government because for many of the same reason white working class will be attacking the government. And even though they may be racist, they will have a common issue and may cooperate. The political parties are useless and people are becoming more and more disenchanted with politics, but no matter how they vote, it always comes out the same way. But what combination of chemicals it'll take, nobody knows. and just like the Watts riots 20, 30 years ago.
How did they actually start?
They stopped a woman to give her a ticket for running a stoplight.
That's right.
Started the whole thing. So the idea of revolution is that you go through the town and you spread gas all over the ground, and then a guy comes along at some point and tosses a cigarette out of the car, and boom, revolution. Lenin was in Switzerland when the revolution broke out in Russia and was giving a speech saying the communist revolution wouldn't be for 20 years, and it just started. It's hard to tell about timing.
Do you feel like racial tension, though, is on the rise?
Well, all kinds of tensions on the rise, whether it be racial or economic or what. We're moving into a very dangerous period. In a little bit, in a way, a lot like the way it was when we went from the 19th century into the 20th century. Nobody at the end of the 19th century could envision what would be happening in the first half of the 20th century. They'd have been aghast. No, that couldn't happen. So we're that way too. We're in the 20th century. We had it pretty easy, really, the last part of the 20th century. And they don't see what's coming, and I see what's coming. It's not pretty. All it takes in this country is for gasoline to double and triple. And there's no chance for gas to go down with the Chinese absorbing it. Almost 20% of it already, and with their industrialization, they're going to be siphoning off more and more world of oil. And the Arabs would probably rather sell to the Chinese anyhow than Americans. Religious fanaticism and racial upheavals and all these things are running together. And with people like Bush at the helm, boy, you're really asking for it. He just doesn't understand.
What do you think he doesn't understand?
The neocons had this plan. They were going to go over there and have a domino effect. They're going to take Iraq, and they're going to take Syria, they're going to go after Iran, and then we'd have this peaceful, wonderful Middle East. The fools. They don't understand the dynamics of the Middle East at all. They don't think like we do. They don't think Western. They think fanatically Muslim. And that we went through this back in the when the Crusaders went down there. Pretty well got swallowed up by those Muslims. And then the Muslims turned around and invaded Europe, and we had to fight our ass off to drive them back. Same way things happening now. We stuck our finger into a beehive and we're going to get stung bad. And the whole lunacy of telling the American people we're bringing democracy to these people, they don't want democracy.
What do you think is going to happen there? I think we're going to pull
off. We're going to lose thousands of men, and it'll be in worse shape when we leave than when Saddam Hussein had it. Saddam Hussein was the only guy who could keep that place in order, whether you like him or not. He was a secular leader that kept all these factions apart. And now we've released them again, and all the Sunnis and all the Shiites and all these factors are going to be fighting each other.
Think there might be civil war?
Yes.
Oh.
It's almost there now. Anybody who studied what the British tried to do in Iraq in 1919 or so will know what the score is. The British got driven out. The prime minister lost his job. And I think the same thing's going to happen to Bush. he gets reelected, by the next time, and of course he can't run again, I guess, he'll be one of the most hated men in the country. And when the people find out that it all was a stupid charade and a lot of it to protect Israel and all that kind of crap, they're going to be really pissed. And that's why, you know, Michael Moore, I really like his movie. I've seen it twice, and I think he did a great service in putting that film out. And Kerry, I think he should have been given the medals, not so much for getting shot in Vietnam, but coming back in here to this country and having the guts to go before Congress and tell what a rotten, worthless war Vietnam was. That's what he should have got the medals for. And for Bush to criticize Kerry's war service is obscene. I am tempted to vote for Kerry, but I doubt whether I can bring myself to it because he's got the same position on the border and immigration that Bush does. You know, they're going to make them all citizens, 15 million Mexicans. So I could not vote.
What were you talking about going down to the border today?
Yeah, I could think that was a little bit of having a few drinks. I was thinking about going down there, but I'm on deadline for my newspaper. I got to take that in Friday morning. I got a lot of
work. What were you going to do that?
Huh?
What were you going to do?
What were we going to do?
Yeah, at the border.
I was going down there, take my binoculars and go down right on the border and attract the attention of the Border Patrol and have them come up and ask me, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, I'm looking to see how we're going to kick the shit out of these Mexicans and close this border.
Well, you know, if
you're not doing it.
If you ever got a free moment at some other point to do that, I would love to get to.
Yeah, well, I had demonstrations ever since 1973 on that border. I've been down there about five times with men. I had 100 men on the border in 73. I had 20 patrol cars on the border in 77. I had 100 cars down there with their lights on to light up the border, of which then Roger Hedgecock and some broad redid this, what I did, and they took all the credit and said, well, this was our idea. Well, I did that long before they did it. And then I had a near riot down there. The left wing was going to attack us when we went down right on the border. But I wouldn't go down there with the right wing when they went down there a few years ago because they're being led by a bunch of dummies and they get themselves killed, you know. If you're going to go down there, you got to be prepared to fight your way out because Mexicans will attack you. It's not the cops. They like to attack you, too. I'll figure out something on the border one of these days. You'll hear about it. I'll take John down there and throw him across the border with a Klan robe on or something. Go get him.
And a sign saying, I hate sticks.
You see that movie with Anthony Hopkins, this one, Red Dragon, about Hannibal the Cannibal, where he rolls the guy down the street flaming in a wheelchair. They'll ship you back that way, John.
Right.
Take that, you gringo. You're going to send me a copy of this paper when it's
sure
out.
Yeah. I'll send you a copy.
More than one copy.
I'd send you most copies.
Yeah. I don't care if it's positive or negative, just so I get a copy.
No, that's no problem.
Okay, the release that we're going to do, you know, that can wait a little while. Keep doing this. This is very interesting.
Well, we've been talking quite a while. I don't know how many more questions you have.
You know what? There was other stuff I wanted to ask you about your family life.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll object to any of this. Just about, because I was talking to some other people and they were saying, you know, John's a real nice kid. And that, you know, if he ever had any trouble at school when he's growing up.
Yeah, had trouble more with the teachers than he did with the students, because a teacher would teach something that was total bullshit in history, and John would go in there with books and stuff to prove it was wrong, and they wouldn't even read the books. John took in about 10 books one time because the principal had him in the office, and he said, well, you won't even look at the other side of the story. And he said, well, bring the books in, I'll look at them. And he did take the books in. The principal wouldn't even read them.
What kind of books?
Historical books on, I think, World War II and things like that. But a lot of the stuff they teach is total bullshit in the schools. And so I've got a big library, so John would research it and then go back in and argue with the teacher. So he learned pretty fast that it didn't get you very far to try to argue with the teacher, because they were pretty much dictators.
How about your daughters, though?
Well, they did it sometimes, too. They all got good grades. My daughters, some of them got scholarships and everything. The next to the youngest, she got all kinds of scholarships, and that helped her go through the university in Washington, Seattle. And they all did well, and they all got good jobs. They're all have families now, and they're doing quite well.